from Illinois Public Media. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we begin today with Illinois state government and politics. We are 1 week removed from Governor J.B. Pritzker delivering his annual State of the State address and his budget proposal for the coming year. All this spring, we'll continue hearing different perspectives on how much money the state of Illinois should be collecting from its citizens and businesses, and how that money should be spent. Joining us today to offer one such perspective is State Senator John Curran. He's a Republican from Downers Grove and the minority leader of the Illinois Senate. Leader Curran, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Brian, very nice to be with you.
In order to accommodate the leader's schedule, we tape this conversation Tuesday afternoon, so we're not taking calls during this part of the show, but do let us know what you thought by sending an email to talk@21stshow.org. All right, let's begin with state finances. Governor Pritzker highlighted a lot of smaller spending increases he wants to see. There's a modest child tax credit program, an increase to higher education. There are other groups calling for more spending on school lunches and breakfasts, even in major tax diversions for a new White Sox park. What was your big takeaway from the start of the public budget process?
My big takeaway, Brian, is the priorities. We don't think the governor's has the priorities of the state quite right. The amount of money being spent on what I would broadly describe as his non-citizen welfare programs continues to be about $1 billion a year. And this is taking from other areas that, quite frankly, we have historically underfunded and lagged. When you talk about the developmentally disabled community, Illinois has persistently been ranked 49th out of 50th in the country on funding program services for developmentally disabled. I just came from a meeting today about just the complete drop off once a student at 22 graduates the post high school program, and the lack of placements, the lack of services, and the extremely long wait list, the PUNS list. These are areas that we have historically had these failings, and they need to be more of a budget priority. I didn't see that. I don't see that from the governor. I have not seen that from the governor in his time here. It is certainly, as an elected official, you run for office, you create a new program. It's a press pop, a press release. You get attention. Great. You don't get attention when you really focus on core state services that have historically lagged. And hey, we're going to make a 20% increase to coming into compliance, with our mental health services, sure, placement needs with DCFS. You don't get that same type of notice, but we really need to concentrate in this state on core services. So I'm hoping through the budget process, I'm sorry for the long answer, that we're going to shift away from maybe the things that catch press attention to our getting our core services correct.
Well, you mentioned, I believe your phrase was non-citizen welfare or something along those lines. I imagine that includes the migrants and asylum seekers. That has dominated a lot of headlines this year. $160 million in the current budget year. That was back in November. The governor pledged another $182 million for the next budget year. Do you support spending that amount of money on migrants? And if not, what should be done about these thousands of people who were bussed up here from Texas?
I do not support spending that money on migrants. And Brian, I would first note the governor has recently chided the governor of Colorado for busing migrants here. We have the same thing happening. The state of New York busing migrants here. So while the majority is coming from Texas, I mean, Illinois is an outlier. And when we have put these programs in place over 6 years, creating holding ourselves out as an outlier. The governor very early on, when he was first elected, in response to, I believe it was Secretary Pompeo, pushed back on, as he likes to get involved in national politics, and proudly proclaimed that he was going to make Illinois the most welcoming state in the nation. And fast forward 6 years later, we are. And what we're seeing is the demand is coming here because of that welfare program. There's more free stuff here in Illinois for people coming into this country. And of course, and I believe me, I completely understand why people want to come to the United States of America. It's the greatest country on earth. And in fact, my parents immigrated, so I'm first generation. I get it. But it's what burden our state taxpayers should be shouldering. That's where the discussion needs to be and where our budget priorities should be. That should not be a budget priority. That is money being diverted from really areas that we have systemic failures in this state. Long answer short, I do not support that or the other programs. We need to dial that back. There's a reason this crisis is not playing out in Michigan, in Indiana, in Wisconsin, in Missouri. We are truly the outlier in the Midwest, and we're one of two or three outliers in the entire country.
And indeed, as many people have said, there are federal implications to this issue that are beyond Illinois' control. But what would you do? I mean, there's 30, I don't even know what the latest number is, 35, 38,000 people who are here, as the governor said in his speech last week, sometimes showing up in T-shirts and flip-flops. What do we do?
Ryan, we first need to roll the programs back to reduce the demand. And we are going to have to, obviously, we're going to have to try to muddle our way through this. There has been no real plan in place. I think the first thing I would like to see the governor do is come to the legislature with a very transparent accounting of what has been spent. I know the numbers you read off, but the reality is we don't know how much he's actually spending on this. He is giving budget authority in the budget to move line items around up to 8%. And using his emergency proclamations to do so, this is really a unique situation and has not been handled in a transparent manner. So we don't really know the full scope of the spend. It would be difficult to, I think that's step one. Come to the legislature. Let's have a transparent discussion on how we dial this back because we are crowding out other services.
Last week around the budget address, I had two conversations, one with your House counterpart, Majority Leader Tony McCombie, who complained that her caucus felt shut out of the budget process last year, and then Senate President Don Harmon, a Democrat, said he appreciated the contributions of you and your Republican colleagues in the Senate, but ultimately sort of regretted that there were no Republican votes on the final budget. What would it take to actually get you or some of your colleagues to vote yes on a budget that still also has majority Democratic support here?
I think a little more, acknowledgement and inclusion of larger Republican budget priorities. So we laid out a list of budget priorities. We had a really good process in the Senate. I really credit the Senate president, his leadership on this. We worked very collaboratively, discussed a lot of small, budget items, department by department. I think we had really good working groups working together and made a difference. And the budget reflects more Republican priorities than it probably has in the last little bit. But we also had some larger policy initiatives where we want direction. We want to take this state. And unfortunately, one by one, as those fell off the table, we were basically left with nothing in that regard. So it wasn't really us saying no. We just got a no on the last one. And that was kind of determined the course of the vote. It was an excellent process. I'm looking forward to that playing itself out again. We were certainly, you get reminded through the process that they don't need us to pass a budget. We are in the super minority. I give the president credit that he would like us to be a part of the budget process. When I hear my House counterpart, it sounds like it's a more difficult situation there in the House. And that's unfortunate because really at the end of the day, we collectively in the Senate represent the entire state of Illinois, and including the minority party, I think is incredibly important. If you're truly going to have a budget document and a budget that reflects the priorities of the state as a whole and not just a dominant majority party.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with the Republican leader of the Illinois State Senate, John Curran. He's from Downers Grove in the western suburbs. We taped this conversation Tuesday afternoon, so we're not taking calls, but you can let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121. In the time we have remaining, I want to talk about some bigger picture issues. Our program has had an occasional series of conversations on the theme of building a better democracy. We're ramping those up again this year ahead of the election. You know, we're in an era where trust in institutions and societal cohesion, really, it seems to be eroding. What steps do you think we should be taking to rebuild that trust and unity in our society?
Brian, I got to tell you, I would touch on something I just touched upon, which is one, really more, and this would go every state, whether the Republicans are in the supermajority or superminority. I mean, it's less about party politics. It's more about power. And it is really respect of the minority party in the process, including them more meaningfully in the process. And, you know, from the lens I sit in, where we are in, we are a party that's in the minority in Illinois through the magic of a gerrymandered map, sit in the superminority. I mean, that's the reality of the process used in Illinois, is our voices are purposefully lessened because of a gerrymandered map. And I know that goes on in other states where Republicans are in charge. And that at its core is probably the biggest factor in the erosion in trust in government and the institutions that are pillars of democracy. I think we need to solve that issue. And you're going to have more inclusion from the minority party, state by state, regardless of whether it's Republican, Democrat, Green, Conservative, whatever the party is. And that is going to give people more faith that their voice is being heard. And quite frankly, more inclusion from everyone, which you're going to get a better policy product that's more reflective of the states as a whole, or a particular state as a whole. And I think that's going to lead to more trust in the institution, the pillar institutions of democracy. We're doing this to ourselves, in my opinion.
Yeah. And of course, the problem is that no one wants to give up power in the state where they have that control, right? So the Democrats would have to do a little more power sharing here. Republicans in a lot of other states would have to do that. How do you convince people to go first? I mean, do you have this conversation with your Republican colleagues at various conferences and meetings that you may go to?
I don't go to many conferences. I have four kids at home. I balance being a father as well, but it is something I have discussed. It's a big issue. It'd be nice to find a solution to this, because I think there are states that have taken that step. And, you know, Iowa's one of them. They're famous for it. And Iowa's getting better policy outcomes. And Iowa has a more inclusive process and have taken the map making process away from lawmakers. And it's a fairer system. So, you know, I understand, and we have always pushed that we would exempt congressional seats, but we're essentially just talking about the state offices here, you know. So I'm not sure we need to sit and wait for another state to act. It is, as you say, it is really not party, it is power. And those in power do not want to give any of it up. And hence, we end up with a system where distrust is on the rise.
Just a couple of minutes left in our time together. We've also seen a lot of fears of a resurgence in political violence this year, especially like we saw after the 2020 election. And as you know, and we've talked about this before, you know, acknowledging defeat when one is defeated is a core part of our democratic process. I wonder how you are thinking about what your responsibility is, particularly as a Republican in leadership, to make sure that we are tamping down threats of violence as we are heading into this election this year in a very divided America.
I think, I would tell you first, for anyone listening out there that is thinking about running for office, you should not run for office unless you're prepared to concede defeat. and make a outreach phone call congratulating the victor. Okay, our process depends upon that, because at the end of the day, when elections are over, we all have to come together and work together. So, I mean, that's a core tenet, and I strongly believe in that. I would also tell you that, you know, what we say as public officials, we are held to a higher standard, and we should be, and it is important, and we should be called out if our rhetoric is hateful or incites violence. That should never happen. And I think if you look at the messaging of the Senate Republican caucus, you know, I think you would see that we abide by that. It is certainly something I abide by. And, you know, we have responsibilities as public officials, and we've got to make sure that we do our best policing that.
John Curran is the Republican leader of the Illinois State Senate. Leader Curran, thank you for taking the time to speak with us on the 21st show.
Thank you, Brian.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.